Masari. In tonight's edition, police impound truckload of arms bound for Nigeria. Who are behind these arms? Greater Accra Regional Police Commander will be our guest on the lines. The Woyo Mejagant Saga investigating body Yoko invites Usafo Mafo, but he declines. And yesterday's presidential interaction with the media, the politician's verdict. Greater Accra Regional Police Command has intercepted a truckload of ammunition heading to Nigeria. We have down the line the Regional Police Commander, DCOP Rosebi Atinga. Good evening to you, Mrs. Atinga. Welcome to Behind the News. So can you tell us the details of this interception that you undertook today? Hello, Madam Bio Atinga. Can you hear me?
Good evening.
Can you tell us the details of this interception?
Good evening.
Good evening. Can you hear me? I'm afraid we seem to have lost Mrs. Bio Atinga. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can send us a text via 0264418767. The text line again is 0264418767. We're trying to reconnect with the Greater Accra Regional Police Commander, DCOP Rosebio Atinga. Behind the news live on Radio Ghana in Accra, we've been rejoined by the Regional Police Commander, the Greater Accra Regional Police Commander, DCOP Rosebio Atinga. Mrs. Bio Atinga, welcome again to Behind the News. The question I was asking is, can you give us details of the interception you undertook today? DCOP Bio Atinga, can you hear us? Can you hear me? She seems to be engaged with other matters. You're listening to Behind the News. We'll try again and draw attention to our call so that we can speak to her on this issue. Behind the News is live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can also get us wherever you are in this country. Any regional FM stations of the GBC is currently broadcasting Behind the News, and that's what you're listening to now. We are also on the internet at gbcghana.com. Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Well, the man under whose tenure as Minister of Education, Science and Sports, the Woyome contract was alleged to have been abrogated, Usafo Mafo, is reported to have declined an invitation to appear before Iyoko. Instead, Mr. Usafo Mafo has filed a suit. What does this suit entail? Let's find out from the lawyer Mr. Usafo Mafo, who was also one-time finance minister under former President Kufuor. You're welcome to Behind the News tonight. I'm Lawyer Godfrey Dami.
Hello.
Good evening, Lawyer Dami. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, so first of all, why did Mr. Usafo Mafo refuse to appear before the Yoko today?
I think to say that he refused to appear before the committee would be a misstatement.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't what he did. I would prefer the word declined. He declined to appear before the committee.
So why did he decline to appear?
He declined to appear before the committee, as I explained in my letter to them. That because the matters that the committee seeks to investigate are matters that arise out of Auditor General's report. Indeed, in 2011, the Auditor General, in his report before Parliament, had referred to the issue relating to the payment to Afed Woyome. The Auditor General had even indicated that the manner in which certain payments were made, including Mr. Afed Woyome's payment, was made, is one that warrants investigations by Parliament. And that was the first time that the good people of Ghana heard about it. That is when Parliament was debating that report. The report was debated upon in December 2011. So, my respectful view is that if a matter has been raised in Auditor General's report, the way to deal with it has been specifically prescribed by the Constitution. And the Constitution in its Article 187 has stated that Parliament, upon the presentation of the Auditor General's report, would then go ahead and debate it. But if you look at the standing orders of Parliament itself, the manner in which that report ought to be dealt with indicated. The relevant committee of Parliament will have the matter referred to it. And in this case, the relevant committee of Parliament is the Public Accounts Committee. And the Public Accounts Committee's hearings are public. I mean, it is shown on television, aired on radio for all of us to see. So our humble position is that, indeed, if any candidate investigations ought to be conducted into the waiver matter, to the effect that the payment was made and contained in the Auditor General's report, Parliament is the appropriate body that ought to undertake such investigations.
But does his appearing before Yoko spoil anything? Even if Parliament, what does this?
Because the Constitution does not give the power to investigate matters arising out of an auditor general's report to Yoko. He does not give it to anybody apart from Parliament. That duty is the exclusive jurisdiction of Parliament. Yoko cannot even do anything at all. But the President, you cannot even purport to investigate. So all we say is that, yes, we are prepared to cooperate with the public inquiry to the extent that it is fair and candid. And being candid also implies that the whole public will get to know, so that it will not seem as if we are appearing before a committee whose proceedings are secret, whose proceedings are in the dark. We go, we appear before them, whatever evidence that we give will not be known to the public, but eventually a report will be given in which perhaps certain wrong allegations of wrongdoing or whatever will even be made. No, let the whole Ghana know what is happening.
But does the client have any mistrust for Yoko?
We do not necessarily have a mistrust. All we're saying is that even Yoko itself reports to the Attorney General. The Attorney General is implicated in all of this. The Attorney General was the one who prescribed that the payment should be made to Afrigorobi. Following that prescription, the payment was done by the Finance Minister. Now, these are all members of the executive. The executive, the person who has the executive is the president. The president is saying that Yoko should carry out the investigation and then present a report to the Attorney General, who is also part of the same executive. Do you not see any clear case of conflict of interest? A matter affecting a person is dealt by the same person who is affected and also receives a report.
All right. I'd be grateful if you could just hold on. We have on the line now the executive director of Yoko, Mr. Matthew Akpaji. Mr. Akpaji, good evening to you. Welcome to Behind the News. Your outfit invited Mr. Safo Mahfo to appear before it today in respect to the investigations you are carrying out with regard to the payments made to Mr. Alfred Woyome. He declined to appear before your committee. What do you make of that?
Good evening and good evening to your listeners. We invited others, including Mr. Safo Mahfo, and in the morning, even my deputy spoke with him on phone, and he said he was on his way coming, except that he will pass through the party. He was passing through party headquarters before he came. So we have been waiting the whole day and speaking with others, and just this evening I saw some things on my table that he said he could no more come because he had never given part what he had told him that he was coming.
So Mr. Morty Akpaji, sorry I mispronounced your name. I've just been told your name is Morty Akpaji. Now, do you suspect, because he told you he was passing his party headquarters, do you suspect then that it was a decision by the NPP to refrain him from appearing?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to have guesses. I'm just stating the facts.
But then, what do you understand by that? What are the implications of his, inability to appear? Mr. Akpaji, can you hear me? Hello, Mr. Akpaji? Well, I'm afraid we will try and reach him back. It's like we've lost him. So, Mr. Dami, we also know that, well, you are the lawyer for Mr. Safo Mahfo, but we know that the MPP is also unhappy about this kind of investigation by Yoko. Do you get a sense that your client, after giving an indication that he was going to appear, was maybe advised by his party not to be there?
No, I did not file the action on behalf of MPP or on behalf of any party. I received instructions from Honorable Safo Mahfo personally. And, upon receiving the instructions, I advised him legally as to what to do. So I did not know what action the MPP is contemplating, whether Safo Mahfo was advised by the MPP or not. I have no position to tell. Because I'm not acting as a politician.
Even though you have indicated... I'm sorry, sir.
I don't even know where he passed through before he came to my office. All I know is that he came to my office today.
Okay,
he
please.
He says that he passed through the party office and maybe the party might have advised him. Well, that is your allegation. I don't know. I'm not in a position to answer to that.
If you could just please hold on because we've got back Mr. Morty Akpaji. Mr. Akpaji, the question I was asking is, are there any implications for him for not appearing before Yoko today?
Well, we look at all our legal options under the law. And we take a decision.
But I'm sorry, but your line is so bad. I would be grateful if you could reposition yourself and maybe speak a bit louder so that we can hear you clearly. But do you not find it wrong, as Mr. Dam is saying, that this is an issue that Parliament's Account Committee is going to investigate, and you are also investigating the same issue? Why don't you wait for Parliament to do its work?
You see, we had a petition, and secondly, we also had a distinct from the President, a complaint from the President to deal with. So we essentially are doing criminal investigations, and from the understanding that some crime would have been, some breaches of the law would have been committed, and that's the way we are going. We will in no way take Parliament's job, because we don't have that right, we don't have that authority. But we will act strictly within the confines of our law.
So what you are doing is different from what Parliament will be doing?
In my opinion, yes.
Because yours is a criminal investigation?
Yes.
Did you make this known to Mr. Safo Mahfo?
Oh, in the letter it's clearly there.
That you are undertaking a criminal investigation?
Yes, so we are investigating serious offences, including payments and the construction of the stadium. So he stated this in the letter inviting him. And he saw it and agreed that he was coming. And today he spoke with my deputy and said he was on his way and that he was passing through the party office before he came. So we have been waiting for him.
What allegations are there against Mr. Safo Mahfo?
Pardon me?
What kind of allegations are you investigating about Mr. Safo Mahfo?
We are not investigating allegations against Mr. Safo Mahfo. But the allegations we are investigating are the issues involving them are issues in which he was directly involved as a one-time minister.
How was he involved? Can you tell us that?
He was the Minister of Youth and Sports at the time those events took place. The events leading to all this eventually culminating in the Wyoming payment.
So what are you finding out from him? Are you finding out from him whether there was a contract or not?
There's a whole range of issues, including that one.
Including this one. So which other ones are there?
I will plead with you. You know, when issues are under investigations, we avoid going into those issues so we don't compromise people and the investigation. So if you kindly just pardon me, so I don't go into any of those issues.
Okay, but have you had any hint that other people you have invited may also not be appearing before you?
Well, what I know is that a lot of other people have appeared. Other people have appeared. So.
But you do not think that Mr. Safo Mahfo's non-appearance today will affect the investigations that you are undertaking?
It will, because it's a very vital, at this stage of the investigation, his evidence and information will be very vital.
But are you making a headway in your investigations?
I think we are. At least we are establishing facts and taking evidence from people who can talk to us about the actions and inactions that took place.
We wish you all the best, Mr. Moti Apaji, in your investigations. Thank you so much for talking to us tonight on Behind the News. Have a good night. So, Lawyer Godfred Dami, briefly, yes. What kind of suit have you filed on behalf of your client?
Well, it's a writ of summons accompanied by a statement of claim. It was filed at the First Strike High Court, yes, and then subsequently we filed an application for interim injunction to restrain Yoko from proceeding in the interim. And that application has been fixed for the 18th of January.
And the basic reason is that you'd want this to be done by Parliament with a live broadcast, for people to know exactly what happened. You want it done in the open?
Yes, of course, yes.
So if Yoko is going to employ that strategy, would he appear?
If Yoko had the power, he would do so. Yoko does not have the power. It's only Parliament which has the power. So we want Parliament, which has invested in the relevant powers, to do so, and we'll cooperate with them.
Lawyer, thank you so much for being with us tonight on Behind the News on Radio Ghana.
Okay.
Have a good night. Lawyer Godfred Dami is lawyer for former Minister of Education, Science and Sports, and also former Minister of Finance under the Kufuor administration, Yao Safo Mahfo. You are listening to Behind the News. The program is live on Radio Ghana in Accra and all regional FM stations of the GBC. You can also get us live at gbcghana.com. Here are some of your text messages. This one from Ochi Isaac in Damongo, NDC and Mills have nothing to offer national service personnel, so vote against them. We are not treating national service personnel tonight, and I'll plead with you to try and address issues that Behind the News is discussing. What is the Secretary General of the TUC saying today? As a teacher, my pay has gone up from 340 Ghana cedis to 850 Ghana cedis. What percentage is a fair increase? And grateful people, Joe Na. Behind the News is live on Radio Ghana. And as we have already announced, the Greater Accra Regional Police Command has intercepted a truckload of ammunition heading for Nigeria. We have now on the line Regional Police Commander DCOP Rose Buatinga to tell us more. DCOP Rose Buatinga, good evening again. Welcome to Behind the News. So tell us, what exactly did you intercept today?
We had the items in a vehicle, a Coca-Cola vehicle at San Achimota this afternoon.
And what items were on that truck?
Arms and ammunition.
Arms and ammunition. Can you give us details of those? What kind of arms? AK-47, what kind of ammunition were they?
We have a quantity of pump action guns, a number of double barrel guns. Then we have ammunition, mainly cartridges, running into thousands.
How many people were on this truck?
Five people were on board the truck, two Nigerians and three Ghanaians.
So the truck was loaded in Ghana here?
It was loaded in Ghana here, at the basement of the vehicle in a false compartment.
And do you have an idea from your investigation so far who owns this truck?
We don't have any idea for the moment.
And you have no idea what purpose it's going to serve in Nigeria?
Not yet.
Where are these men you arrested today?
They are in our custody.
Are you processing them for court?
Certainly. After we conclude our investigations, we will put them before the law court.
What have they violated? What law?
They were smuggling these items outside the country. And there are rules and regulations that govern dealing in arms and ammunition.
Where these
they have been found with weapon and ammunition. You cannot on your own possess this item unless you are licensed to carry them. So certainly they violated the laws of Ghana.
So these people you have arrested have no license to carry any piece of ammunition as they've done today?
They don't have.
These pieces of ammunition, were they manufactured in Ghana? Are they locally manufactured ammunition?
No, they are imported.
That is to say that they came through our borders or wherever into this country?
Certainly. They are dealing in the country.
Are you surprised that such a quantity could enter this country?
License to deal in the ammunition.
Okay, they came in people who are licensed actually imported them into this country.
Come again?
You are saying that those who imported them into the country are licensed?
Yes. There are people who deal in these arms and ammunition, and such people are licensed.
But those who are licensed, are they permitted?
Who have found these weapons with, they do not have any license that allows them to deal in them.
But those who are licensed, are they permitted to trade in arms with people who are not licensed?
No, they are not allowed to sell them to people who legally have not been permitted to possess weapons.
So will you be going after them?
We will certainly.
Have you been given any leads as to whom they are?
The case is under investigation.
Are these young men or old men? Can you tell us the ages of these five?
They have various ages. They are five, and they are Kofi Abuaji, he is 52 years, a Ghanaian, Sunday Eze, age 35 years, from Anambra State, in Nigerian. Kwesia Sumwa, age 29 years, a Ghanaian. Kwejo Bafo, 38 years, a Ghanaian. Amozu Samuel Taiwo, age 35 years, from Ogun State, Nigeria.
But then, which part of Nigeria is it? Is the truck heading to, or was it heading to?
I can't tell.
And you don't know to whom it was being sent to?
No, I can't speculate.
Is it a common phenomenon, you know, transporting ammunition across borders in this, you know, have you been intercepting such trucks, load of ammunition in this country? That often?
This assumption of command, this has been the first one that we have intercepted.
Right. We thank you very much for talking to us tonight. But are you going to keep this in the police armory?
Come again?
Will you keep the ammunition you intercepted in the police armory?
We keep this in exhibit stores.
Thank you very much, madam, for talking to us tonight. On Behind the News, DCOP Rose Buatinga, Greater Accra Regional Police Commander Emmanuel Bombande is a security analyst. He's on the line. Mr. Bombande, Happy New Year to you. We have not spoken this year.
Happy New Year to you and to all the wonderful listeners.
Thank you so much. So then, the question I also want to ask you is it a common phenomenon, you know, transporting ammunition across borders in West Africa?
No, it should not be regarded as a common phenomenon. It brings to the fore the threat of the proliferation of small arms that is pretty much on the high agenda of our security agencies, and how that in itself is undermining peace-building efforts across the sub-region. And to that extent, we cannot categorize it as a normal phenomenon, to the extent that even in the ECOWAS Convention on small arms, there is specific requests that countries have to put in to even be able to clearly declare the type of ammunition they import. So even at the level of the state, the importation regime defined by the convention is already strict enough. How much more when you talk about individual licensing? And so this brings to the fore, as I have said, the menace of the proliferation of small arms. And do not forget that if you look at the exit of Ghana and the entry in Nigeria, you are talking about six border posts, if you look at Togo and if you look at Benin. And the fact that these people thought that they will go through these six borders and be able to carry these arms into Nigeria tells you the level to which people are prepared to go to pursue the agenda that is an agenda of destabilization.
What do you make of this? Because this load of ammunition was being transported to Nigeria. We know what is happening there, pockets of, terrorist acts, and then the strike, nationwide strike and all that. It looks like some people are bent on destabilizing that country.
This is, in our view, as a matter of fact, today, this was our preoccupation of reflection in the office. And tomorrow, as we normally do, ONEP is going to issue a statement. First of all, if our security agencies, if our Ghana Police Service is able to confirm that these ammunitions were destined for Nigeria, there will be nothing wrong with speculation that it will feed into the ongoing strife. And so let me quickly say that if you look at the threat of the proliferation of small arms, to peace and security, you can look at it in its generality, as we have often talked about, in terms of porous borders, in terms of how it undermines the efforts of the state, the efforts of key actors in building peace. But if you now feed that into the specific political context of Nigeria today, it even becomes worse. It tells us that, one, whereas the Nigerian issue currently, the Boko Haram threats to peace and security are viewed as a national issue within Nigeria, what you have seen now happen today is that there is a cross-linkage that is sub-regional in character, to the extent that the weapons that could feed and escalate that crisis comes from outside the borders of Nigeria. It characterizes this internal strife, not just limited to extremism and terrorism in Nigeria, but that it has a cross-border linkage that should worry the entire sub-region. And in that bigger context, therefore, we completely are surprised that if you look, beginning with ECOWAS, up to now, there has been no statement from ECOWAS in solidarity with what is happening in Nigeria with the government and people of Nigeria. Neither has any government in West Africa come out clearly to demonstrate solidarity and support with the people of Nigeria, the religious leaders, and for that matter, the government of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, in how the threat that is now really, really disturbing should be dealt with. To that extent, therefore, there is a sub-regional character of the terrorist threats, particularly when you hear that they have linkages with Al-Qaeda. That compels us not to leave it only to Nigeria, but that such threats do not respect borders, as they are doing now, if the speculation is true that the arms are destined for Nigeria, and that the threat could even go beyond borders. And for that matter, it concerns the entire ECOWAS sub-region. It concerns our leadership in the region. It concerns civil society. And we better begin rallying together and supporting and exploring how this issue can be dealt with sustainably, rather than the way it is being treated currently in Nigeria.
Well, in the absence of solidarity with Nigeria, what should individual nations like Ghana do to protect their own territories?
First of all, it is good news that our police service has been able to intercept this. In other words, they have to continue to be as vigilant as they have been and double the vigilance, probably 100-fold, to make it impossible for any penetration of our borders with this type of illegal trade in small arms. And to the extent that they can do that, and when we talk about our police service, we are looking at it internally. When we look at our borders, we look at our immigration service. When we look at our seas, we look at our navy. And even in the air, we look at our air force. There is nothing that should be taken to chance about the capacity of extremist groups to be able to explore the weaknesses that are cross-border to undermine any country in the sub-region. But to do that effectively, it must be collective. In other words, the level of cooperation, we know that at the level of ECOWAS, our chiefs of defense staff have their own working committee. They advise our presidents and governments. To what extent are they upscaling their level of cooperation across the sub-region so that you then see an indirect positive support to how the security agencies in Nigeria are dealing with extremism? And to the extent that we are doing that, to as much as possible remove what is quickly becoming the creation of a religious divide, whereas indeed it is the extremist elements that are trying as much as possible to exploit differences between Christians and Muslims in Nigeria. And if they succeed, if we allow them to succeed, then they are going to continue and exploit differences between Christians and Muslims in other countries. And that is where you begin to see the religious dimension becoming a sub-regional issue, not just limited to Nigeria.
Mr. Bobande, we thank you very much for being with us tonight on Behind the News, and have a good night, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Behind the News is live on Radio Ghana in Accra. 27 minutes to 9, welcome back to Behind the News, where President Mills' encounter with the media yesterday continues to attract comments from analysts and political commentators, whilst the ruling NDC has commended the president for being on top of the issues raised. Some analysts and members of the opposition saw it otherwise. We're Behind the News tonight digests the media encounter from political perspectives. First of all, we go to the minority leader, Osaeche Mensah-Bunsu. Good evening to you, Mr. Mensah-Bunsu. Welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening to you as well.
I'm sure this year we haven't spoken yet, so Happy New Year. I think it's another.
A prosperous one to you.
Thank you. So, I'm sure yesterday you watched or listened to the encounter between the people of the media and the president.
I couldn't get it right. If you can repeat it for me.
I'm asking whether you saw the encounter on television or listened to it.
I did. I saw. I heard him speak on the. I was monitoring on PFM. I think the line went bad, so I switched to GTV, and I saw the president deliver.
Maybe if you had listened on Radio Ghana, you wouldn't have had to switch to TV.
But when I go down, my system had already been programmed on that T-system, so I was listening. And I think the value is the same. It's the same message that was coming out.
Of course, but that notwithstanding, I'm sure you enjoyed the encounter.
I think that I saw it. As to whether I enjoyed it, I'm not too sure. But I must commend the media this time around. I think the questions which were filed this time around were more searching, more probing questions than questions which were asked last year.
Which ones?
So I must commend them generally, even though some of them, you know, I really cannot tell for myself the relevance of some of the questions that were asked.
But then,
generally,
which other questions did you...
About improvement over what happened last year.
Well, I see, but which ones did you like this year that you think were an improvement on last year's?
The questions that were asked, the first one, for instance, which related to the president's action year. And then somebody also asked about the Wyoming matter. The president responded, but it wasn't conclusive, so they brought him back and so on. If a trespass, a media man goes to ask the president a question and prefaces his question by saying that, well, he's aware that Kufuor government caused the abrogation of contracts. When the president doesn't know this so far, he's a bit worried. But generally, as I said, I think, and then somebody said that the president has been magnanimous in not chasing his opponent. You cannot imagine the first person asking such a question. It's so subjective. That's already taking sides when you're asking the question. And you don't end up, you know, getting anything from the president. So, as I said, some questions generally were well framed. And as I've indicated, in my considered opinion, they represented a tremendous improvement over what happened last year.
But I gather from what you're saying that you are giving the media high marks, at the same time very low marks.
No, I'm talking to issues that were raised and the way questions were asked. And I'm saying that some were somebody from length, for instance, ask questions relating to SDS, basin corridor water, and being the person from TV3, Robert Chire, asked questions on the Wyoming.
It's unfortunate your line is going bad, Mr. Seche Mensabun, so I don't know that there's anything you can do about it. Maybe by repositioning yourself, it could be better.
I'm sorry, but.
Well, there are a variety of issues, but for me, the key thing would have been essentially to ask him what it is that he plans, as it were, to do this year to ensure that our country actually makes the kind of very rapid transformation that we need to make, in totality. I mean, that's the question I would have loved to ask. But it's a hypothetical one, right?
Are you surprised a question like that was not asked?
Pardon me?
I'm surprised a question like what you just suggested you would have asked was not asked today at all.
Well, I mean, the journalists will go there with their own perspectives, they go there with their own ideas, their own temperament, their own, you know, background, you know. So in that sense, I don't think that one should have an idea that the kind of question that will be asked will be cast in stone. But of course, for me, personally, as an academic, as an intellectual, as a patriot, as a nationalist, these are the questions that I think ought to be brought forward. Of course, the other questions that were asked were relevant. There were other questions bordering on policy and the rest of them. So relevant in that sense, yes.
But others have said that the questions were below par.
You are saying people think that their questions were below par?
Yes.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, we have to understand that the nature of the kind of format that they had meant that, in a sense, very key, vital questions, you know, as it were, could not be just properly framed and then put forward.
And that means that they should have made good use of the short time they had. Knowing that they had such a short time, they should have asked them the best questions, or, you know, the most important ones.
Yes, but I mean, the way in which the thing is structured, first and foremost, when you're asking a question, sometimes the complexity of the question demands that you in a sense, have the time to frame it properly, you know. And so, given that, in a sense, this particular event did not have the kind of time that one, you know, given former, you know, past events, the kind of duration that those past events had, in a sense, I think that this was to be expected. There was a bit of a rush, and so that meant that asking those questions, that those complex questions that we wanted to see, somehow would have been affected. But, well, you are right as well, that giving the duration, that meant that the journalists should have focused on the vital questions and raised them. But I think some of the questions were raised. The STX question was asked. The question that is now on the front burner, the Wyoming case was put forward.
So many times it was put, it was asked,
and all of that.
And that was asked so many times, or too many times.
Well, I mean, that is the burning question right now. Here we have a republic in which, for me, the masses of our people still face vital questions in the 21st century, in spite of what the Honorable Akologo is saying. I think we face very, very pertinent questions. We have an urban crisis. We have sanitation crisis. The hospitals do not run properly the way we want them to run. The education sector is in crisis. I teach university students. The English, you have problems with the expressions. You have problems with the way in which you expect them to understand the world and where we are going and the rest of it. Right? And here we are, you know, as a country. The whopping amount, 58 million, is allegedly paid to one of our fellow citizens. I mean, definitely that's a question that has to be asked.
Do you think the president answered the questions?
Well, I think that to a very large extent, he tended to be jocular too much. I think there was too much, if you like, a tendency to in a sense, crack jokes and that. You know, which is useful, but somehow I think it took the shine off, you know, some of the answers. For example, when he was asked about one compatriot of ours who was unfairly jailed for 14 years, I think his preamble to the question was a bit difficult for some of us. Again, when he was asked a question about his leadership style, again, the way in which the question was answered, in which he said, well, you know, the lady in question did not know, you know, was choosing words out of 10. I think those were for me low points. That took some shine out of the whole process. Again, you know, again, the format is constricting. And so that meant that the president was caught in a certain framework where he had to be snappy, he had to be, in a sense, answer the questions in capsule-like, if you like, context.
Okay, Dr. Amo, I'll ask you my last...
affected the process.
I'll ask you my last question, but before I do that, I think the Minister of Information wants to react a bit to what some of what you said.
Yeah, I just want to... I just want to commend Dr.
Amoa.
Lloyd Amoa about... his position that, yes, the questions were asked, the encounter was good, but that we could do
better.
I want to commend him for that. But the question on the jail citizen, for instance, the questioner herself did not know exactly what to ask, because if you play back the tape, you hear she didn't know whether the fellow was even put before court, how the fellow, you know, was sent to jail.
But the answer.
Well, I'm, you see, if you yourself, you are not sure of what you are putting out there, your question is maybe truncated in so many formats and so on. What else do you want?
But in 98, the president was the vice president, 14 years ago.
No, yes, but that's what we're saying. If 14 years ago there was a president, he was a vice president, and you know, the onus did not rest on him. If he had been given the opportunity to handle it, that might be a different matter. But there was another regime for 8 years. Nobody knew of all these things. Then you come to another regime, run into its third, fourth year. Then all of a sudden you are being told. You are not being told straightforward that somebody was put before court, the court carried misjustice, and so on. And therefore, you are not able to structure your question in such a way that you get the definite answer you want. So the president says that, look, this is a matter of rule of law. Let's look into it. The way you have posed your question, I don't know which part of it I should answer. I don't think
that's the best answer he could give.
Under the circumstances, the fellow didn't know what question to pose. The basis of the question did not come out properly. Then let's go to the leadership style issue. He said that he doesn't want to judge himself. You are asking me to say whether I'm transformational leader, or servant leader, or charismatic leader, and so on. I simply don't want to judge myself, because if you understood the things, you should be telling me. You get it? So he said, look, he has been given a responsibility to do what? To serve people, to provide A, B, C, D. Look at the economy. Look at our table. Look at our health. Look at our education, as Dr. Lloyd Amoah is putting it. So I don't think the president evaded any question, or he joked about any question at all. And the structure and the nature of questions. Take Ben Efson's question, for instance. It was straightforward.
Well, he asked more than one question, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I'm saying that. It was straightforward. There were two questions, but they were both straightforward. He came out straight and said, look, there is this issue on the verification of the voter. He also thinks that there should be verification of the ballot paper. Will you make additional funds available? Because it borders on, you know, elections outcome. And we must not take chances. He went straight for it. He knew that there was 1 hour allotted. He knew that if he wanted to ask his question, he must go straight for it. So I don't think the president joked about anything.
Okay.
He answered them according to how they posed the question.
Mr. Ramo, that's the response. But just my last question to you before I let you go. Do you think this encounter is important? Is it necessary? How does it contribute to policy formulation, for instance?
Well, I think it has symbolic value where the presidency reveals itself as an institution to us as citizens to interact with the presidency. So to that extent, it is important. But I think that somehow we have to learn from some of these critiques that have come, so that we can improve the format to allow both questioners and the president, be it the current one, if he's re-elected or if he's a Kufuor-Addo and they want to continue, to be able to give us far more substantive responses to the questions that come up, so that it will not seem as if the encounter is being used more or less for politicking. And I'll say that again, just to respond quickly to the Honourable Minister, if the argument is being made that the President did not want to judge himself with the question of leadership, that flies in the face of the president's own position, that he had done well. He had given himself then. Do you understand? The logic is difficult to take. Again, right. On the question about rule of law, all we wanted was for the president to assure and assuage the republic.
Okay, sir.
This government, like other governments, is interested in this question.
Dr. Amoah, we thank you very much. Thank you so much for your contribution, and have a good night. Dr. Lloyd Amoah is a lecturer at Ashesi University here in Accra. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. I understand Ben Efson is on the line. Mr. Erskine, good evening to you. Welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, Berham. Thank you.
Well, the minister just commended you for asking straightforward questions. Do you think that's what you did today? Were you happy with that?
Well, I think that in asking questions, you must let those watching and listening get the import of it. Preambles before asking questions seem to deviate and distract people's attention. And you are in radio. Attention span for answers 2-3 minutes. So if you take half the time with the preamble, I think that you lose the import of the question. I mean, before the press conference, I knew there would be a lot of questions on Wyoming. But there was an angle that I was expecting that nobody will pick, that in the previous cases, starting from PNDC, NDC won under Rawlings, Kufuor, and so on. If you look at the judgments, you see those who had caused the illegal abrogation or illegal termination of the contracts. So if there were, like the president explained, if it is willful, as per the Mr. Fred's judgment, then whoever caused the willful loss should be brought to book.
And so were you satisfied with the answer that was given to your question?
Oh, I was. Because if you remember, I hinted that I think that I'm sure the president would agree that his integrity and his fight against corruption was on this, not Wyoming alone, but these judgment debts and so on.
But
like a questioner asked, in terms of rule of law and justice, yes, if you steal 5 fingers of plantain, it's an offense. You go in for 3-4 months, and somebody's willful neglect or willful act will lead to the government paying millions. Rule of law, you have to pay. Then that person also must also face the music.
How about the whole encounter? What's your assessment?
Well, I think that given that the president has had asked Iyoko to kind of bring the facts on the table, I didn't expect the president, even if he knew the facts or some of the facts, to be quite forthcoming in such a public manner. Because then the work that Iyoko will be doing, he'll be undermining it. So I think within the boundaries of what he needed to disclose, I think that they did well. I think that some of my colleagues too did not come well prepared. So some of the questions, even though they could have been better phrased and a bit expanded, they did not give the president the chance to be able to give more answers.
Mr. Erskine, we thank you very much for talking to us tonight on Behind the News. And Ben Erskine is the editor of the Daily Dispatch. Have a good night. Behind the News is live on Radio Ghana in Accra. I realized you wanted to react to something. Can I give you the...
Oh, no.
But are you in government surprised that the issue about the relationship between the president and the founder of your party keeps coming up anytime there's an encounter,
because,
media encounter like this?
Because some people want to feast on something they are imagining. The president said that he has no problem with former President Rawlings. He has said it time and again. There may be differences in approach, but there's a possibility of them sitting down and ironing out these things. And this is being worked on. Others are trumpeting it so high just to score some political points. But we don't have any problem.
There's no problem?
Well, I don't think so.
You know so, I don't think so.
Well, you judge yourself.
What do I judge? I just wanted to
choose one of the things the worst I'm used to. What I'm saying is that within the family, there could be disagreements as to approach on certain matters and so on. We are managing it within ourselves. But the magnitude that people are playing it at, you know,
it's not what it is.
It is not.
Okay,
is
so
not.
Anytime there's an encounter like this and you go back into into your offices and all that, what do you discuss? Do you pick anything from the questions and then you try to work on those things?
In terms of policy? Yeah, definitely. That is why this...
We've had three encounters.
That is why these encounters in the first place are organized.
So what has come out from all the...
We are still discussing.
Not this one. Previous ones.
Previous one, you just said that there has been an improvement, except the time, the duration for this encounter. But there has been improvement in the manner that the president came out. You know, that this is what we gathered after the meeting. So we are learning, and that is what this.
But in terms of policy formulation, do you think this contributes in any way?
Greatly.
I wish you could give us one.
No, I will not tell you now.
Let us take some text messages. You are listening to Behind the News. This one says, this is from Deng Kuma and KJB. Prof is a good leader. In 3 years, he has done what Napoleon could not do. Mohamed Nani in Wa. Today's editor's forum was a waste of time because the president deviated on all the questions. Adamuda in Wa. It's disappointing and unfortunate that the president was emotional and passionate when he was asked about his health status. Why? Kudos, Mr. President. Your performance was superb. You win 2012 election, inshallah. Tasson Solomon, Adon Kwanta. Elias Winwa, the president did well in his approach to questions. It shows he is on top of issues. Daniel in Kumasi, the president's performance was below the pass mark. I will vote against him. Daniel says, so you're listening to Behind the News, and it's live on Radio Ghana in a car. So people are going to judge the president or decide on whom to vote for based on what he did today.
If you recall, the president said that it's unfortunate that in this country we have politicized everything. If you look at the way the messages are coming, definitely they are taking some political lines. And that is not what we should be looking at. We should be looking at a state. What is the state looking for? What is this, what are the leaders doing for us? Instead of just coming out and saying this kind of negative things about it, that do not encourage anybody at all. It's not good enough.
There's somebody who sent a text also about the president's health. Ms. Mone, are you also surprised, or what do you think about this question about his health, you know, that is always asked, questions about his health?
To me, there was nothing offensive about the question of president's health, because being the embodiment of state power, whatever happens to his health should be of supreme concern to the generality of Ghanaians, and any question on that issue is in the right direction. But there's a limit to which we can ask this question. But if we stretch it beyond a certain point, then certain motives, you know, could be read into that question. But to ask about the president, how do you feel? Because the impression out there is that he's not been in the best of shapes as far as health is concerned. And
you see, why it is becoming a problem is that it is being used at every opportunity, like His Excellency himself put it. Even when he's outside this country, they are following on his health. Even when he is in a region outside Accra, they are following on his health. But they do not sit back to look at. So what makes him, you know, click the way he's clicking? He taught the whole country. In fact, if somebody will say it's an exaggeration, but let me put it. We have 170 districts. He toured the 10 regions. He went to every district. He went to every district. You can imagine somebody, you say he's sick and so on, and he's able to do all these things. And all the time you are chasing him with this. That's why he said, if his presence is a bother to anybody, let the fellow feel it. But he is here to work, and it is God who
but
knows.
Why is it that for the past 3 years you've concentrated this encounter only in Accra, at the castle? Do you invite media houses from the regions?
Well, you say senior editors of the region.
But there are radio stations and television stations outside Accra.
We have the national policy fair we have taken out. We have the regional meet the press we've taken to the regions.
And meeting so, the president himself is what I'm talking
what
about.
I'm saying is that when the president goes on these regional and district tours, he has encounters with the media there.
Not in this format.
No, that's what I'm saying. The other format that the media outside Accra have the opportunity to...
Are they also able to ask questions as those in Accra did today?
Why not? Why not?
But it's not anything properly planned. It's asking when he goes to the regions.
If you are talking about the president having regional encounters,
yes, like
with the media, it's different from saying the senior editors, forum. You get it? Because all if you decentralize, say that the editor of Daily Graphic will be based in Bulga, we have no problem. We'll go and meet him there.
But are you really sure that those who ask questions are indeed senior editors? Not all of them are senior editors.
But if it is that senior editors forum, and you go and bring somebody who is not, that the result is what we are discussing now.
Mr. Money, don't you feel for your other editors in the regions who also are senior editors? I mean, you can have an editor in WOW or whatever, regional editor of whatever, of any of the major news houses, and they should be given the opportunity.
In terms of rank, I think...
They are in Accra.
All their media houses have their bosses in Accra.
The private media houses?
All of them have their bosses in Accra.
Well, just a news, some news flash. This one, we've just learned from behind the news that the Greater Accra Regional Chairman of the CPP, Nana Bwedi, the Regional Youth Organizer, Zekoting, and some constituency executives from Ashama have all resigned their positions. We're following up on this, and I'm sure we'll bring you developments on it as and when we get them. You're listening to the end of the news. It's like, it's almost time to... Why are you both laughing?
It's a hurricane, which will end now.
You were asking about issues in NDC. You know, that's why I'm laughing. All the political parties have their own issues.
And so you need to comfort yourself. Okay, briefly.